Welcome to Cloud at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert, or SME, Roundtable. Hi, I'm Sherry Bettine, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. Today, I'm here with many of our IT experts that work on cloud-based solutions here at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. We'd also like to learn a little bit about you, so we've posted a question in your Q&A window that we'd love to hear the answer of. What percentage of your portfolio have you taken to the cloud? As you answer that question, we can see your responses on the screen in front of us, and with that, it'll help shape how we answer your questions. I'd like now for our experts to introduce themselves. So we'll start with you, Rob.
Hi, I'm Rob Pauly, and I run a cloud security team here at Microsoft IT. It's a team of architects, engineers, and program managers, and we focus on helping Microsoft essentially digitally transform in a safe and secure way.
Hello, and I'm Joe Mazzotta. I also work in Microsoft IT, and I work in the cloud management services team. And the cloud management services team is a central infrastructure operations and help desk function. Specifically, my role is a program manager on the Azure strategy and consulting side. So I work with internal and external teams helping them adopt Azure.
Hi, I'm David Johnson. I'm a program manager architect accountable to our Office 365 and collaboration services portfolio. The team that I'm in within Microsoft IT drives how we collaborate within, as a company, everything from Exchange, Skype for Business, SharePoint, our portal ecosystem, Enterprise Search, basically the technologies that enable our employees to work together.
Hi, my name is Arun Maningal. I'm a senior software engineer at Microsoft. My team is responsible for the strategy, design, and development of hyperscale services that power cloud scenarios, which are crucial for functions in our organization.
We are also doing one more thing with the SME Roundtable today. We are collecting up your feedback for the product team. So in addition to questions for our SMEs, if you have some feedback you'd like for us to pass along to the product team, please enter that into the window as well, and we'll collect those up offline and give them to the teams that they go to. We'll make every effort in the next hour to get through all of your questions. However, if we don't, we'll stay behind in the studio, continue answering questions, and we'll post that extended footage with this video at Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. With that, we'll get started. And I first want to ask our SMEs the same question we asked you guys. What percentage of our portfolio have we taken to the cloud?
Do you want to start for me? It's a very good question. So when we talk of the cloud, there are multiple nuances to that aspect. There is a SaaS aspect to it, there is an IaaS aspect to it, and there's a PaaS aspect to it. So when we touch upon each of them separately, we find various levels of maturity and adoption in each of these spaces. For example, in the SaaS space, I'm sure David would also touch upon additionally on that, we are seeing at least upwards of 95% for services that we rely on managed services, the Office 365 offerings. When we talk of the PaaS capabilities that we have migrated over, that is where your custom development comes in. And this is where different teams within Microsoft are at different levels of maturity. Having said that, any greenfield operation definitely starts off with an on-cloud offering only, because there is a strict mandate that there's no on-prem development that can happen on a greenfield thing. On legacy and brownfield applications, also, there is a gradual cutover that takes place. So it is a cohesive mechanism which ensures there is business continuity while at the same time having focus on the cloud. So that's how we are modeled within Microsoft in terms of adoption of the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. With SharePoint, for example, as you say, we're over 95% in. We had a huge portfolio on-premise with My Sites, Team Sites, group collaboration environments, portals, almost all of that's now in the cloud with a couple of exceptions. So same thing for Exchange. Obviously, other on cloud release services like Yammer, clearly only in cloud. Microsoft Teams is in cloud. Skype for Business is now partially in cloud. So we're moving more and more portfolio, but things like SharePoint, for example, which was a huge footprint for us, are almost completely there now.
Well, then I think from a from an OS instance perspective, I know that we have pretty aggressive goals in moving up to, I think our goal is 90% of having our on-premise OS environments moved into Azure by the end of June, I believe. So we're that deadline's fast approaching, huh?
Okay. Yeah,
it's coming up soon.
And we're currently at 50% virtualized in, well, 50% in Azure from a OS instance perspective. And as Rob mentioned, yes, our goal in Microsoft IT specifically is 90% by the end of the fiscal year, June.
With OneDrive and Office 365, can you explain the role of SharePoint in Microsoft's strategy?
So effectively, think of OneDrive as the OneDrive for Business as the place for the individual files. The files that the person may have formerly stored on their My site or their machine or other replication devices where they're storing them locally for them. They may be sharing them, but it's really first and foremost for the individual. We think of SharePoint as the team collaboration environment, the portal environment, where you've got a new group, new project, you spin up a new group or SharePoint site. That SharePoint site is where those team collaboration files live. And that's fundamentally the distinction. And the reason for that, by the way, is fundamentally from a permissions model, we want the simplicity of a SharePoint permissions to basically handle the team. That I want to make sure that when I'm sharing with my team, I've got a space I can do that safely. When I'm sharing it with just my manager, great, go do that on my OneDrive for Business site.
Okay. I'm wondering if there's an aspect of on-premise versus cloud, because Office 365 has SharePoint as part of its product.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Oh, so SharePoint. So just to be, I'll add to that. So SharePoint Online is effectively part of Office 365. So OneDrive for Business and SharePoint, they're just different site types on Office 365. So if you go into Office 365 and you see within the suite navigation, you've got a ribbon, which includes things like your OneDrive for Business, includes your SharePoint portfolio and your SharePoint Home to show you all the things the employee cares about. And yes, you still, of course, have SharePoint on-premises for things that you want to keep on-prem. In fact, in our case, we have a SharePoint hybrid environment in place so that SharePoint on-prem content shows up within the Office 365 search index. So when someone, for example, finds content in Office 365, it includes all that content that maybe someone still has in an on-prem SharePoint site.
Okay, very good. What is the best approach to migrating to Azure?
So I talk to many internal and external teams in terms of migration. There's lift and shift. There's refactoring, rehost. And so there's various various ways you can get to Azure. In terms of the best or the optimal strategy, I think if you're taking a look at enabling agility and cost optimization, from a Microsoft IT perspective and across the company, we're taking a look at the SaaS and PaaS offerings, because we're in the SaaS and PaaS environment, you're able to leverage more of Azure's native capabilities in terms of scaling, in terms of management or manageability, in terms of security, so that you're not having teams on-prem having to manage all of those levers or drivers in the cloud. And so in Microsoft IT, there are many teams actively marching towards refactoring workloads. The other aspect of refactoring is also starting to decouple traditional tightly coupled applications on-prem so that you can scale components of the application independently.
So you can move some to the cloud, have some on-prem.
That's certainly one approach. Our approach, so that's certainly one approach. We are actively driving in Microsoft IT 90% of our environment to be in Azure. And so ideally then we can start decomming more of our traditional on-prem infrastructure and truly leverage Azure strengths.
But that helps you also just take it piecemeal and not have to do big bang, right? If you can migrate.
Correct.
Which is an important perspective here. Microsoft is uniquely positioned in that it has a hybrid story which can ensure your business continuity. It's not like, hey, tomorrow I have to be all in cloud. That's not a practical reality on nor a pragmatic approach to follow. So the assets that we have in the product offering that spans and allows our customers to go from being completely on-prem to the cloud in a very predictable and pragmatic fashion, which adds value to the offerings that we have today. And that's helped us a lot within our systems as well, when we have done especially critical invoicing systems and legal and compliance systems, because not all cloud data centers may be compliant on day one to all the regulations in that country or the province that it is hosted in. So that's a critical aspect that helps.
Yeah, this whole I think you guys hit on a couple. So I don't know if there is a right way, right? Like a single way. Yeah. But I think you have some characteristics that you brought up, at least in what I've seen and experienced. I think having a very pragmatic approach that's very specific to your organization's business and needs, right? I think understanding kind of what it is that from a tolerance perspective, what risk do you feel comfortable taking? Where do you have skills? Where do you have processes that you're able to kind of experiment? So I think being pragmatic, you know, understanding kind of what you're trying to get out of it. I think starting small with something that's greenfield, right? Yeah. Something brand new that there's really not a lot of business risk in place. I think that's another great way to kind of get in there and take advantage of some of that. And I think through that, you'll be able to kind of test some of those connectivity pieces that you have, whether it's like service management, you know, performance, availability, cost, you know, your security pieces, how are your developers interact? I mean, there's all these kind of things that you can begin to experiment with and understanding. Because I think the one thing that I do know that the technology, it's always gonna be there and it's changing faster than we can even keep up with. But the part that's really the most impacted, I think, are people and their skills and their willingness from a cultural perspective and a personal perspective to actually change, because sometimes the way you do things in the cloud is different. And then also the business processes that you have that support that kind of migration. Those things may change significantly as you move.
Right. And the advantage of starting small, like Rob mentioned, is that you are able to reuse your learnings back when you take back to a bigger project that is of important significance to your organization. You don't have to go hunt down you don't have to peel the onion when you're doing a big project. You have already encountered the problems, you're aware how to resolve them, and that also builds in a motivational culture in the team that they have had success, they have tasted success, which they can replicate into bigger projects.
And their skills are growing, right? Yeah. So as you're doing the small, medium, big, you're growing the capabilities in your organization.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. If I could add, so from a Microsoft IT perspective, a couple workloads that are types of workloads that really make sense to look at, identify first, and then take a look at learning in the cloud are applications that have burst capability maybe once or twice a year. And so some of the applications that line of business applications that Microsoft IT started with migrating are tools like our HR review system, where it's used twice a year. Previously, we would have a massive infrastructure that was permanently on-prem. By migrating it to the cloud, we're able to burst when we need it and then scale back down. And so our cost savings are, we're realizing ROI on our application portfolio.
So we're not paying for the whole box when we're only using it 2-3%
throughout the year, correct.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another use case on similar lines is the dev test environments. I mean, most of your dev test and your perf environments are just lying vacant when you're not really pounding that with your workload, so to speak. So these environments could be spun off, and this is where automation comes in and helps you gain that financial benefit And it's not only financial benefit, it is also a discipline that gets imbibed into the team about use your resources when you need them rather than having that hogging mentality and keeping it for you forever, which also introduces another forecasting issue, which we'll touch upon as we go.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I think that last piece was like something that we would certainly file under a big lesson learned. I think that's one of our biggest lessons learned about how to build that snooze or turn it off kind of mentality, right? Yeah. Back into the culture. Yeah.
Yeah, turning the lights off when you leave the building, it's something you have to encourage and build in as a muscle in your organization, right?
But if you think about like the journey from a data center perspective, where we had a lot of companies had big data center build outs, bought a lot of physical hardware, and we found that it was underutilized. Then came virtualization technologies that was intended to kind of up-level that. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, when you kind of move to the cloud environment, it's almost back to starting, you know, with what you had the data center, because buying those SKUs at whatever you think you might have is so easy to do, but it's not probably what you need if you really looked at your overall utilization.
So you can overbuy in the cloud environment just like you can overbuy in
the home. I think that's another lesson that we've learned too. But I think back to the way that you don't have on-premise is actually you have a really easy button. And I don't know, from our perspective, we think that we give our developers like the obligation actually of taking those things down and bringing that and holding them accountable for that cost.
And with the cloud, with the management tools that you have, you can also incentivize that culture, which would not have been possible traditionally. Because there are management tools which help you to do it. There's also this philosophy of, hey, developers might have good intent, but if they are not provided with the necessary tools to help accomplish their objectives, they wouldn't be able to do so. But what cloud has enabled is that there is a mechanism in place for you to set a process in place and also monitor whether that process is being followed. Yeah. So the dual benefits accrue.
What are some of the biggest challenges that your organization has had to overcome as you moved from hosting IT services in your own data centers to those run by cloud service providers? Rob?
Ooh, the security one. That's a big one. I think for us, you know, I kind of go back to this concept of traditionally in security, we've kind of played gatekeeper on premise. You know, you had to buy your hardware from somebody, you had to go through some security checks, whether it was to making sure that the operating system was configured correctly, whether the network stuff was configured right, whether the apps that were gonna run on it were done properly. But the power of the cloud is certainly democratizing, you know, the access to compute, network, and storage, right? And so essentially those gates were removed, and I think a lot of the folks, at least in my discipline, it's still a big leap as we try to apply the same principles in the same way that we did on-premise with those in the cloud. The philosophy that we've tried to take to kind of enable innovation to occur in Microsoft, which is, you know, from an IT perspective, you know, our goal is to simplify and accelerate, right? And if we're going to accelerate the innovation that occurs here, we've got to get out of the way of enabling that to happen, but we also have to be the backstop or the guardrails, I like to call it, guardrails instead of gates, that we're kind of helping people from kind of making some of the mistakes and getting, you know, everyone in a little bit of trouble.
If I could add to that, that's a great point, Rob. So our organizations work closely together with security, and our teams worked with Rob Pauly's team pretty closely around a couple things that customers could do today. One of them is, as Rob mentioned, thinking about alleviating gatekeeper and thinking about guardrails, leveraging ARM templates, so Azure Resource Manager templates in Azure to pre-provision environments. Our teams worked with security very closely to publish ARM templates out to the company so that Microsoft internal teams can consume these ARM templates, build out environments. Within the ARM templates, we've embedded our IT standards and security controls. Yep. There's also another construct called a DevOps toolkit, which developers can then import it directly into Visual Studio. As they're building their code, the DevOps toolkit enables the health and welfare of the code itself so that IT nor security is getting in the way, but we've enabled an experience that that makes the business more agile, mm-hmm. allows them to go to the cloud. From the developer or the business perspective, they don't see gates. What they see are IT and security helping them get to the cloud in a way that's standard for Microsoft and in a way that's secure.
You make security easy for the developer. Make it the default path.
Absolutely. That's our
If it goal. Compiles, it complies. That's our goal.
All right. Right. Good deal. What are some proven practices in outsourcing to Microsoft SaaS offerings? David?
So I'd say, first of all, understand, I guess, understand the services available to you. Understand the capabilities you can take advantage of. For example, if I'm building a storage layer for a bunch of files, for example, for my application, when can I use SaaS services to back that up? For example, when maybe storing files, for example, in Office 365, SharePoint Online, or OneDrive, and consuming them from my PaaS application or other applications it's using against that. So because, of course, 365, the SaaS services are there as a fully packaged product where I can go into SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business and use the or Exchange and use the UI completely, or I can use the APIs from these services and embed them in my own experiences or applications and therefore using the data. For example, you might not think about why would I ever want to build a calendaring tool for an application when Exchange clearly already has a calendaring system built into it. I can simply call that. I can simply call Mail. I can call Yammer for social connectivity. I can call SharePoint for file management, for example. So understanding what the services are available to you and then figuring out how they best apply to help you build and your applications. And that's, of course, in addition to just simply getting people to onboard on the core services themselves, which is a whole other conversation about onboarding.
And to add to it, the real paradigm shift that is happening in the SaaS space is the application of analytics, which we couldn't do traditionally if you had your data dispersed on-premises across multiple assets, right? With the cloud, what you're essentially having is one view of all the data across your organization, and you could apply analytics and derive meaningful information and predict the trends around what is happening. It could be sentiment, it could be a lot of things that are critical for your business needs.
Yep.
So hold on. So David, it sounded like it's kind of amazing what you just like kind of just struck a chord in my brain. Like it sounds like Office 365, very similar to what like Azure's done, kind of providing these we call them PaaS, but essentially things like web apps and you know Azure Machine Learning. I mean, those are just other types of SaaS that you're leveraging. So similarly, Office 365 also provides these kind of building blocks by which you can kind of begin
exactly.
to assemble these kind of apps.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool stuff.
Yeah. Arun, tell us a bit more about application insights we have today that helps mm-hmm. application
sure.
developers.
Absolutely. So one of the major things that happens when you deploy your applications on the cloud is the importance of telemetry and awareness of how your application is performing, because unlike the on-prem world, you do not have the flexibility of getting into the cloud as you wish, though you could do it as on a need basis, but the frequency at which you would be aware of what the application is doing you have to rely upon log analytics and telemetry. And this is where Application Insights as an offering from Azure comes in very handy, because not only does it help you understand what are the code paths that has been taken as part of your application, it also helps understand how the customers are using it, because essentially the scenarios get lit up, and that in turn helps us focus the developers' attention towards features that are heavily used, driven by data, as opposed to an assumption that we believe that users are using it in so and so fashion. So App Insights in that fashion. This also alludes back to the DevOps kit that was mentioned earlier. So it embeds into your application, and you're able to derive analytical information about how your application is used, where your application is crashing, if at all, if there are some code paths which are crashing, even when you deploy. So Application Insights help us in that fashion tremendously. Also, it aids the DevOps culture to be embedded even more. You don't have to rely on an ops engineer or a service engineer to go fetch some logs for you. You have it delivered on your portal in a clear fashion.
And the nice thing about it is we use App Insights not just on Azure applications, but we even embed App Insights, for example, just even on sometimes on SharePoint applications, because I want to understand the result in performance or where potentially there are some bottlenecks in the page load, for example. And App Insights helps provide that.
Absolutely. And the beauty is that the SDK is prepackaged for you. You are only providing additional hooks specific to your business scenarios, and the telemetry piece is taken care of automatically in that case.
So we get the intelligence to be proactive about the support of our applications, yep. too. Even if your application's running sluggishly, mm-hmm. you can see that, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And then there is that time to reaction is proactive rather than reactive, mm-hmm. which is very important.
Right. I think one of the key things, like from a security perspective, I know we've spoken yeah. about the performance or the availability yeah. of the application, mm-hmm. but the power of having something in the hands of a developer that tells them whether their app is behaving in a manner that is different mm-hmm. than what they expect,
yeah.
that's a really powerful thing from a security kind of awareness
Absolutely.
Perspective, yeah. right? And I think as we move away from kind of this traditional, I mean, we look at security kind of as prevent, detect, and respond. And as we move to more of the guardrail approach, prevention kind of, we want to embed great security practices, help people along. We're not going to have the gate. So prevention kind of goes to the side. But being able to detect and then how quickly can we respond to that,
Absolutely.
Such as something like you just talked about, whether the page is not loading fast enough, mm-hmm. et cetera. I mean, there's just a ton of great telemetry that's out there, whether it's audit logs, the App Insight yeah. stuff. I mean, all of that really enriches, I think, what
True.
The developer experiences is. It also, yeah. on the other hand, puts a ton of accountability back and responsibility yeah. back to the developer yeah. to know what to do with that information. But overall, I think from a security perspective, it certainly, and a performance perspective, certainly helps yeah. everything run much smoother yeah. from an IT perspective.
And the beauty is, in context of App Insights as a product, you really don't have to be on the cloud to gain the full advantage of it. Yes, if you're on the cloud, you get more features. You also have a pathway so that when you're prepping up to move to the cloud, you could start by inserting these building blocks into your applications. Yeah. It would still emit out the telemetry, which is yeah. stored in the cloud, and you get the information and analytics about your application.
So this builds a little bit on that, or yeah. parts of that. This is a question on cloud service management, especially for SaaS. With 95% SaaS, what is the best way to proactively monitor that services are working? Can you rely solely on service communications, or do you need more?
Well, I'd say that it's a mix. I think it depends also on the service in particular you're talking about. I think the communications back from Microsoft, for example, alerting, you can use tools to watch to from Microsoft that let you see within the dashboard of how yourself or your services are performing and where you stand around that. We do, as Microsoft IT, we do a couple other things in addition to that. So we watch, we have tooling, for example, with App Insights, to just watch when are things performing potentially a little subpar. So even though the core service will tell us, great, you know, the 365 is up and available and all these core offerings are here and this is where the service stands and I can go in the dashboard, I can get proactive reports about that. But I also have our own monitoring in place with the App Insights stuff we were talking about earlier. And so from a service management perspective, you know, Microsoft obviously communicates to the customer, the enterprise themselves, about this is what's going on, our contacts. Obviously then it's up to the IT shop to how do you distribute that within your own organization. We do things like our service management. If there is a service outage, for example, or something's going on, we use, for example, services like Yammer, where we communicate broadly to our employees of, here's what's going on in our services. Here's something new in our services. We do things like have what we consider users groups. For example, we have an Office 365 and SharePoint users group on Yammer, whereby we can have a customer conversation around things that are working well for them. They can ask us questions. We can kind of do help desk almost plus of here's the how to solve your business problem with the tooling, and here's things you should be aware of because here's how our service is changing, or things you should be aware of because maybe there's a negative impact for some reason.
If I can add to that, so one of the other things that the organization that I work in, Cloud Management Services, provides in terms of best practices internally is also think about when you're in SaaS or PaaS, think about your retry logic. Mm-hmm. Think about the health of the APIs themselves as you're interacting with SaaS and PaaS. And so understanding the health, performance, often a lot of the APIs have, they do have telemetry that's provided back. So you can query the API and understand the overall health of the API. So our organization ingests that information. We ingest that information in a couple different sources. One of them is Operations Management Suite, and then we provide that service back out to the rest of the IT organizations. Mm-hmm.
And LiveSight, from a service manageability perspective, LiveSight is a huge focus on Microsoft, especially with cloud services, because we understand that our success is dependent on the usage of our services. And for our usage of our services to happen more frequently, it has to be performant, available, and when the customer needs it, it should be there. And any time beyond a certain threshold, if that characteristics are not being met, the developer responsible for that piece of code is alerted real time. And that is made possible through monitoring tools and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So if it could be, the thresholds could be for latencies, it could be for reliabilities. Like if we start seeing a bunch of errors in a cluster, and if it is beyond that threshold, the developer is alerted. This has two impacts. A, the time to mitigate is reduced drastically because the person who is aware of that functionality intimately is fixing that. And the other aspect is the developer is incentivized to enforce those retry logics and the secure coding practices and the best practices in coding that he should have done in the first place. And this is really moving the needle in terms of quality of the application overall in an iterative fashion. And that is the beauty at which we operate. So service management, as a whole, the bar just keeps rising as we go out.
Well, being a cloud service provider, you're providing your utility.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. You've got to be really good. The water's got to turn on when the faucet is cranked. Right.
Yeah. That's right. What are the plans for a hybrid solution, a solution whereby you can mix on premises with cloud infrastructure and services? So we have hybrid. Mm-hmm. We're hybrid. Who wants to comment on that?
I could talk about it from a security perspective. I think we certainly have been running kind of in the Office 365 space a lot longer in kind of the hybrid arena than we probably have in the kind of traditional line of business app development space that we do see in Azure. And I know David probably has a lot of insight about how those pieces kind of matured over time. My perspective is definitely more focused on the Azure side and how we moved. And it's definitely I'd say like the connectivity options from a security perspective that we've been able to provide, it's taken us a while to get to the ones that we feel comfortable with from a security perspective. A little bit still our mindset, and some of it's the capabilities, and some of it's how we want to get it implemented. But certainly there's been a ton of challenges and a lot of lessons learned about what's the right way to do it. I think it's kind of back to the thought of the right way to do it. I mean, if you just start completely with greenfield types of things, and I know that may not be possible because of data anchors that may exist, but if it's at all possible to start with a greenfield and just work on that piece to get that right, I think you are so much better off than trying to, keep that all in your on-premise environment. That's just been, from a security perspective, one of our traditional struggles.
Yeah, as I think about hybrid in Microsoft IT, at least, so we do have hybrid where we've got portions of the application, line of business application on-prem, particularly like data anchors. Mm-hmm. Data anchors because there's multiple dependencies with other data sources on-prem that simply are not feasible to move right away. Or we want to move it in the right way to Azure, and so we have to decouple and componentize the application and move the parts that are easier and provide an ROI immediately. As you mentioned, connectivity plays a part. Now, Microsoft itself has a product called Azure Stack, which provides the ability to run your on-prem environment similar to Azure, and then leverage capabilities of both, leverage Azure-type services, both on-prem and in Azure,
right.
So that the goal is that you can move, you can shift between on-prem and into public Azure seamlessly. The other aspect of hybrid is thinking about how to componentize, how to decouple your applications, and then how to get the benefits of both worlds, if you will. If you've got already sunk investment on-prem that you want to continue to kind of ride until that, until end of life, and then there's portions of your application that you want to move to Azure. We have got a couple teams in Microsoft IT that have taken a very novel approach in terms of taking a look at their front-end websites and moving those to Azure websites or Azure web apps, and then doing that very seamlessly, and then either over Service Bus or over ExpressRoute, being able to maintain the data connection back to on-prem.
Yep.
And so there's many different ways you can achieve hybrid. And at the end of the day, Microsoft is in a great position where we provide multiple options to
mm-hmm.
customers. Our products strive towards seamless integration.
And at various levels of maturity, depending on your organization. So that is a huge plus for someone looking into moving into cloud. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and as Robert noted, for 365 hybrid, we have things like hybrid services for SharePoint, for search, for example, or hybrid taxonomy. So I can have a single enterprise taxonomy term sets that span both on-premise and cloud. So no matter where I'm managing my content, for example, I've got content consistency. No matter where my content is stored, I've got the ability to have it with single search index. So the core 2016, for example, provided these, for the on-prem product, provided these additional hybrid capabilities to work against Office 365. And so between that and Exchange Hybrid, we've got a pretty good, we've had for years, this ability to be live kind of in both worlds, prem and cloud.
And it's easier today.
Yeah, it gets easier.
What is the roadmap for Azure site recovery, like Azure to Azure replication, et cetera? I'm going to caveat initially by saying we speak to what we know in IT, and we don't always know roadmap questions, but is this one that we have any insight on?
We could have this definitely posted back on the product team.
Yeah, we'll take that back to the product team.
It's an important feature. We are not discounting that because how do we recover from disaster? There are multiple facets to it, and we just don't want to speak for the product team because they are still in various stages of development.
We do use Azure Site Recovery in Microsoft IT. We use it in a couple ways. One is for site recovery. The other aspect is for simple migration. And so we can take an entire environment and migrate an entire environment. But as everyone was saying, roadmap and product-related questions, future.
Go back to the product team.
Future questions on product capabilities. Yeah, let's have the product group answer that.
Is the back-end storage for OneDrive and OneDrive for Business files the same? As I understand it, OneDrive for Business is for syncing SharePoint document libraries, and I'm assuming would be stored in SQL in the cloud. Does the 1 terabyte of OneDrive personal storage I get with Office 365 get stored in SharePoint also?
So let's think of it from this way. You're, as a tenancy, you get a certain amount of total storage available per user allocation, of which your defaults are actually now 25 terabytes for OneDrive for Business and 25 terabytes for SharePoint Site Collection. But up to your maximum purchase storage for the tenancy overall. And then you can decide if you want to allocate that and maybe limit how many, what your users can use. So first of all, OneDrive for Business is a different storage mechanism than OneDrive Consumer, but you don't need to think about it from that perspective. Think about it from a policy and manage and storage perspective. All the 365 protections that SharePoint has in place and SharePoint OneDrive have in place are all there for you on the 365 service stack. So everything from the encryption at rest, the identity management infrastructure in place, for sharing models and protections and policy management. They apply to both the SharePoint Online sites as well as OneDrive for Business. We think of the two as the two sides of the same coin of I've got for OneDrive for Business where I've got my personal storage and I've got my team SharePoint site for my group storage, but both are fundamentally using the same storage models underneath and both are using against my tenancy quota. I just have different I can go up to 25 terabytes on my OneDrive, and I can go up to 25 terabytes on my each individual site collection on the SharePoint.
One important point that this question raises is about how should we perceive managed services going forward? Traditionally, we had to know what is happening in the guts.
Yeah.
What managed services allow is the internal boilerplate is shielded. So today it could be SQL Server, tomorrow it could be Azure Table or Azure Blobs or whatnot. It's your services and the policies, like how David mentioned, the policies, the SLAs that you have been contractually obligated that you should be concerned about rather than the internal guts, which keep changing frequently, by the way. We experiment, yeah. We do A-B tests, we find out what is in the best as various technologies mature and so on and so forth.
Yeah, because SharePoint OneDrive would store content in SQL, yes, but they're moving a lot of that content, especially blobs, into Azure storage, for example, always encrypted at rest, but still stored there as opposed to just stored directly in SQL. Mm-hmm. But whether it's stored in SQL or Azure, to your point, it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, all the same controls are in place for you, all the same protections are in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's hard sometimes as a digital technologist, you have to be curious,
yes.
Right, to stay abreast of the latest thing and to keep it in. Sometimes you do want to know what's going on,
yeah.
Like underneath the covers, and that's something that you should keep asking those types of questions.
Yeah.
One of the things, I actually talked to a customer, a very large customer the other day, and one of the things that they talked about was, the need to know that kind of stuff was essentially pivoted on whether that would provide themselves with some kind of advantage in the marketplace. With their specific industry.
Absolutely.
And if it was commodity, like sharing files or storing stuff or getting email, unless they were in the business of doing that, right? It's not going to be a differentiator for you in the marketplace.
Absolutely.
And that way, you can kind of focus that curiosity back to the stuff
yeah.
that really makes a difference to help your organization transform and innovate, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Scenarios have to be the front and centerpiece,
yeah.
And then from there, your curiosity can help you derive the differentiator.
Yeah, great
valuable.
Question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This may be one we can't answer, but I'll ask it. What is the roadmap for Microsoft Teams? Will this replace SharePoint Groups and or Planner down
the
road?
I can answer that one because that's a common, I think, customer misperception. Because here's the thing with Microsoft Teams. At the end of the day, Microsoft Teams sits on top of the Office 365 Groups fabric. Let's think of Groups as an infrastructure. It sits on top of the Azure Active Directory for the directory construct for the group. It sits on top of a SharePoint site. Every group effectively in Office 365 gets a SharePoint site, gets can get the mailbox and calendar and other artifacts for that, can get Planner and everything else, and definitely gets an Azure Active Directory security group effectively for that group. Teams sits on top of that. So think of Teams as the kind of persistent chat-based teamwork collaboration paradigm on top of Office 365. You can choose to use that and collaborate with Microsoft Teams if you want kind of that rapid collaboration where you're kind of almost like in the hallway, I want a quick conversation back and forth, I've got my channels, I can IM about quick things and get information and see what's going on. But that doesn't preclude the fact that underneath Microsoft Teams is that group. That group contains a SharePoint site. So when I save files in Microsoft Teams, that's going into the SharePoint site for that group. If I'm using Outlook and I'm having a conversation in Outlook and I click files, those files are going to that same SharePoint site. So it's not that Teams replaces Groups. It's not that Teams replaces Outlook. It's a different collaboration model on top of the same infrastructure. And so when they don't preclude each other, it's about how your team likes to collaborate. But at the end of the day, you're protected because your files are managed consistently, irrespective of how you work, what collaboration workload you do.
Okay, and when you set up a team, you get a group.
When I set up a new Microsoft team, I get an Office 365 group underneath the covers, I get the SharePoint site, I get the Outlook components of that, including a mailbox, including a calendar, I get Microsoft Planner. So I get all the team, I get the, all the groups constructs with the Microsoft Teams on top for the persistent chat and the nice new interface for that kind of team quick collaboration that Teams provides.
Azure Stack appears to be a solution. Can you tell us more about it? We've mentioned it a few times.
Mm-hmm. So Azure Stack, there's plenty of information up on the Microsoft website. So Azure Stack provides the ability. It's currently in preview or technical preview. But Azure Stack provides the ability to transform your portions of your on-prem infrastructure to appear and act just like Azure. And so it creates creates resource providers for compute and storage, whereby you can then create VMs that are similar to or identical to what you would get in Azure. You can then land your workloads on-prem in facsimile, like Azure, and then you, the goal would be to have the ability to seamlessly migrate those resources as you need, or burst to Azure as you need it.
So you can develop on-prem like you're developing for Azure.
Correct.
With this technology.
Correct.
And then when you want to move to the cloud, it's easy.
Correct.
Or you could also alternatively think about it for, say, a large bank does not want to really put it on public cloud infrastructure. They want a private cloud. It's your private cloud functioning just like how Azure would in your data
center. With the auto scale.
Absolutely. Yeah. All of those baked in.
So the only part, you mentioned compute and storage, so you're just utilizing your own network.
Correct, yeah, and the goal, my understanding is the goal, I'd have to take a look at the roadmap. My goal, my understanding of the goal is that Azure Stack would also provide PaaS-type services as well in the future.
Fantastic.
As well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So things like Azure Web Apps.
Makes tons of sense.
So how does this panel feel? Microsoft Azure stacks up against Amazon Web Services.
Frankly, we don't want to be talking for competition at this point in time, for or against in that context, right? We are here to share our experiences, and we'll be happy
to
share our
experiences. Very diplomatic answer.
Specific to Azure, yeah.
Thank you, Arun.
And I will add to that, that Office 365, if you're building a solution on top of it, it doesn't really care where you host that solution it's consuming from 365. I can build provider-hosted applications running in AWS or running in Azure that connect to and enhance Office 365. Yeah.
So our APIs are well documented. They just rely on the transport mechanism, I mean your protocol. It doesn't care about who owns the hardware where your compute runs, whether it's Azure or AWS or Google Cloud or what have you.
And there's plenty of professional reports. Gartner, I know, does an in-depth report every quarter, I believe, comparing Azure and AWS. There's plenty of reports out there that also compare the individual services.
Absolutely.
Within AWS and Azure. You get very much a lot of the comparable services. You know, there's compute and storage, data stores, SQL or NoSQL in AWS, just like you'd get in Azure. You can get Linux device, Linux, Ubuntu. Various flavors of OS in Azure and AWS.
So now that we've come out of the diplomacy shell, let me talk to this on the Gartner report specifically.
The gloves are off.
Exactly. Yeah. So specifically, Gartner has four reports for the best, the quadrant report that they have, right? For IaaS, PaaS, SaaS, and the data storage layers, right? Microsoft Azure figures on the top quadrant in all the four of them. AWS does not figure in the top quadrant for all the four of them. So that's one way to, if you wish to look at it. Yeah.
Let me hurry through the next few. Let me know whether Azure has any roadmap to enable VNet peering between two regions. Is that something we know anything about?
I think we'll have to leave that to the Azure networking team to disclose.
We'll pass that on.
Microsoft IT has provided a very similar requirement. It's a requirement that we need internally, and so it's a requirement that the product group has. When they deliver that, should be addressed by the product group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we'll pass that along that you desire that capability as well. Mm-hmm. K Can you speak about mixing and matching multiple Azure Office 365 offerings? For example, I want to use Power BI to report on a new Intune Bring Your Own Device program's adoption, and then use machine learning, cognitive services, to see patterns in the mobile device usage. Microsoft Flow, Azure Logic Apps, has a good way to integrate lower level tasks, but I don't see use cases like I described. Do we have anything to offer up there?
So that's a great question. That is classical stating that, hey, without developer help, how am I able to stitch together scenarios? But with Power BI, you're able to supply it with your data source, and you could have a lot of analytics around it. Now, hooking Power BI to Intune, certain Intune dashboards, I guess low-level dashboards are possible. That's what the question is alluding to. But advanced analytics, how you really take that out, build your own model, build your own machine learning model, because at the end of the day, it's your model that determines how you're able to predict. What is the accuracy of prediction and whatnot. Today, definitely, the logic apps are designed for a developer logic apps may not be for the developer experience, but you would still have to augment that with some developer, custom develer-built component so that it feeds into the machine learning model, and then as you go and
that's
you
data science, right?
Yeah, that's data science.
That's exactly what. Exactly. And we've done something very similar. There's certainly pockets here inside of Microsoft where we're doing things like financial forecasting, right? Where we're taking data from on-premise, using a gateway to pump that data up into maybe like SQL DB or maybe the Azure Data Lake, right? And then running Azure Machine Learning types of things that our Treasury Department and others, right, go build as a competency, right? Because back to the thing, we think that that might be a competitive advantage for us, so we just go and do things like that. To go and invest in those and areas to derive some intelligence.
Absolutely. Right? And the machine learning model gallery definitely has a lot of pre-canned models which others have built and published for, which is used across industries. So that is something you could use off the shelf, or you could fine-tune it according to the needs of your business, or if you feel that there is a certain bias to certain variables which is not assigned properly, we could again, you know, modify it and again republish it. So that's the model that is taken forward. Certain glues that need to stitch together to accomplish this end-to-end scenario, does not exist today.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of hopefully quick questions. Can we get an updated image of the architecture described for Teams? Is there a place online where they could get the view of the world that you painted with the team creation?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'd have to go look it up and find where that URL is now. You know, Microsoft, the Office organization is providing a lot of content around Microsoft Teams and how it fits within the broader Office 365 ecosystem and groups and where you do collaborate with what. I'll have to find that URL, though.
Okay, and we can post it with the video. How can I get resource utilization report of my subscription on Azure ARM, like number of cores, number of storage accounts, network? Is that a?
I guess there is a partial script that existed definitely in the old portal. I think there is an equivalent for the new portal as well. This is the same thing. If I get that URL, I'll.
Okay, we'll pass it along with the video, with the final video.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we are near the end of our hour, and I do want to ask one final question of our SMEs. What is the one tip you want to leave our audience with today about cloud? We'll start with you, Arun.
Yeah, so today, every industry has to undergo or has already undergone some sort of digital transformation, and that becomes a key differentiator when they go to market with it. Having said that, when your compute environment or your infrastructure behind the scenes has to be the power that pulls you through. So when you go to the cloud with that in context, you just don't want to be lifting and shifting your old legacy stuff in the same manner as it were. You want to add intelligence into it. That is where analytics or machine learning systems come into place, which can help you predict better for your scenarios or your customer scenarios and help them succeed better. Traditionally, machine learning and things like these, which had heavy reliance on compute, would be enormously, it would be costly because the cost would be so exorbitant to get hold of HPCs and whatnot. Whereas now, these are workloads that you could do on demand, which is why you should be embedding a lot more of that into your applications so that you have that edge in your business or your customer's business going forward.
And I would say start with the self-service, easier workloads. When you're starting to go to cloud, especially SaaS services and Office 365, it's open up for net new. We talk about greenfield a lot in this conversation because I think when we think about this, when you think about team collaboration, group collaboration, and even personal collaboration, you want to, of course, maintain what you have and carry it forward. But part of that is at what point do you actually start creating net new in the cloud? When I have a net new project created as an Office 365 group, you then get all the benefits of the workloads, and we talked about Teams earlier. You can use Microsoft Teams. Start to kick the tires. Let people try these things out. How do people like to collaborate in the cloud? Do people like SharePoint Online for file management? Do people in the cloud, do people use the group capabilities of in Outlook? Would they rather use instant messaging capabilities in the chat services with Teams, for example? So just opening up at self-service, it's in some ways people consider it a scary thing of opening up self-service because, hey, I'm letting people do what they want to in the cloud. But at the same time, you can still have the appropriate controls in place to manage who does what and how do you manage it. So you can still protect yourself while you're opening up self-service in the cloud.
Those are great points. And I like the idea of being able to do greenfield. But many customers have, they've got VMs that they simply need to lift and shift. They have workloads that they have the opportunity to refactor for the cloud. My tip would be Microsoft technical account manager or leverage your Microsoft cloud solution architect to fully understand the capabilities of the cloud, whether it's Office 365 or whether it's Azure. What you'll find is that you can definitely decouple applications or services and be able to host them in the cloud and gain significant ROI by leveraging the cloud provider's native capabilities so that you can really focus on making your business agile.
Those are all great points. I think the thing that I would like to leave behind, I use this phrase a lot when I talk to customers, is that it's easier to make your data center look like a cloud than it is to make the cloud look like a data center. And a little bit of that speaks to, like, we've definitely failed many times. We've had to retry because we've tried to take everything that we did on-premise and tried to do it like in the cloud, and it's just not the same. And now that's not to say that the 20-some plus years of ITIL needs to be thrown out the door. No, quite frankly, it needs to be shoved into your developers' brains in the matter of the time span that you have to get there, which I think is the second challenge, is don't underestimate how much it takes, like, the people and the process and the culture to get their heads around how they do live site or what their responsibilities and accountabilities are as you migrate and go forward, or even understand what the power that's been put in their hands to do great things for their company. I think it's a completely empowering concept, but there's a lot of stuff I think that people need to get through in order to kind of really fully realize the benefits.
Great, thank you. Those were great tips. We are at the top of our hour, and I want to start with thanking our SMEs for being here today, for stepping away from your day jobs. It truly is important to do this. And thank you, customers, for joining us today. We truly love the dialogue and the questions and the opportunity to come talk to you. You will find this video posted on Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. And there's a wealth of information, other videos, technical case studies, even readiness guides, how we prepared our organization to adopt new technologies very quickly. We provide those guides to you to use in your own organization. So visit us at Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. We do live shows weekly. Please join us again and bring your friends. Thank you.